On this week's episode of Devil's Trap Podcast, golems are cool.
Nazi magicians are boring. Let's do this. Episode of Devil's Trap Podcast. I'm Diana.
And I'm Liz.
And this week we're going to talk about Season 8, Episode 13, Everybody Hates Hitler.
Facts. Jen. What's up, Diana?
I celebrated my birthday. I've been having some fun times and eating lots of pastries. It's also what I argue is the best candy season of the year. I stand by Easter has the best candy. I stand by this. They got the Cadbury eggs. Ugh. You've got the Reese's eggs. You've got Peeps. Ugh. And I'm a Peep fanatic. We all know this.
I know, they're
and
gross.
Then you've got the Robin's eggs and the multiple. I'm fucking sold. Easter candy is the best candy out of all the candies for the holidays.
Halloween candy wins.
So between...
Halloween candy is better. We all know it.
Well, Halloween candy is just regular candy. It's just small and you just get lots of it. So it's not really special.
Always. Like, it's like some of the candy is special. That's where, you know, and you can get the peanut butter chocolate thing, which is the only thing that matters. And you can get those in Halloween and on Easter time. So whatever.
I guess. I'd still think, but I'm also a Peeps fanatic and kind of a Peeps purist. Will I eat other seasons of Peeps? Yes, because I like Peeps. Are they as good as traditional Peeps? No, I want the fucking little birdie. That's a little swirly guy. I like him. He's the best.
There's no flavor.
I like it. I tried to make the Rice Krispie treats out of them, though, and it was a fail. One of the recipes I found did not come out good. Nobody wants a gummy Rice Krispie.
No.
But yeah, so now I had a good time, and I've had... Lots of sweets and treats and I guess that's it.
Yeah, it's exciting though.
I mean, it's good. It's not a complaint. It's just that's what I got going on. How about you?
I just got back from traveling to the capital of the United States and I yelled at a building. That was fun. Mainly I think I was yelling at people inside the building, but you know, and then I went to the building next door and got to be a cool ass researcher at the Library of Congress, which makes me feel all badass and special that I have now elevated my status to the point where I am just in the rare reading books room of Library of Congress, looking legitimately at stuff and have a reason to do that. And that's pretty cool. Library of Congress is beautiful and it'll come up in this episode, but it is a lovely place, and it's a nice place to spend an afternoon. It's also really cool to go basically be backstage or like a rock star. It's like the VIP pass, right? Like you walk past all the tourists, so they're like, no, I don't even stand in line. I'm a researcher.
Nice.
And you get your own special little card. Anybody can get them. And frankly, tourists, like, it's fucking annoying. I had to wait in line to get my fucking card. All of y'all think it's pretty funny. I'm like, I'm going to Library of Congress and get my reading card. I'm like, some of us actually needed that reading fucking card to do shit. But there's just, like, be a time for, like, fake-ass reading cards. Like, do you actually not plan to use this? Or, like, I just have a window where they go do that. But it was great. I was in the Houdini collection because Houdini collected a lot of things on spiritualism because he was like to disprove that ghosts were real and all that other fun stuff. So his library collection was awesome and it was donated to Library of Congress. So I spent a lot of time digging through that, looking for threads and ate a bunch of good food because DC does have good restaurants. So that was really good. Mm-hmm. And spent some time. I fucked around a couple of museums, but the museums are full of children because it was spring break. So,
yeah.
So that was a good week. But now it's here, and we're preparing for the eclipse.
The eclipse. It's a big deal.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Just to be clear, so if you're not
That's what I don't understand. Like, if you're not in Texas, you may not be getting the warnings that we are.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I mean, and there's other parts of the country because it does cut across, but near you and me both are on the path of totality, which is a big fucking deal to have a solar eclipse for 4 solid minutes in your hometown. And I didn't realize what a tourist event this is. Did you know that before this?
I have a friend who is coming in from California for it. So yes.
Oh, I know. But before this, did you know that it was like, before your friend booked their trip, did you know that this was like a thing people like travel for?
Well, yeah, because people traveled for the last eclipse and that wasn't even as big of a deal as this. And so I don't know. I just didn't notice. But there are towns here like that are declaring like national disasters, like, you know, like everyone. Like, I did last night though take a moment to be like, there was a thread on Nextdoor and I was like, let's just grab some popcorn and see how racist this is gonna get, because you know, people, because it's Nextdoor, it doesn't matter what it talks about, it always just ends up somehow dissolving into a
roof. I don't even know how that
works. It's just how Nextdoor works. It's just how it is. It just always dissolved into someone making a racist comment, and it did. So I mean, somehow it got to be about border security. Thank you, Nextdoor. I know. That is the beauty of Nextdoor. Anything can dissolve into a ridiculous fight. So, I am going to the Rhinery.
Yeah, people traveling. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. That's exciting for you.
Yeah, I'm going to the Rhinery, which is a winery that is there for the conservation of rhinos. I don't know. There's a rhinoceros there. Money is going to charity, which made me feel better because every place is charging like a dumb amount of money.
It's stupid.
And since I had someone coming in, like I felt like I had to do something. So this was like the most reasonable amount of money for like a ridiculous thing. Like, I feel like I'm getting a good return on investment. I just don't know how, like...
There's wine involved.
I just don't know how long it's going to take us to get there and back. I am terrified of getting to the Hill Country and coming back. Just because I know those
You know, they're, like, closing schools. Like, yeah. Many school districts are shutting down. Others are just giving the kids classes and telling them to watch. I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah.
I decided... I was like, it's just a process with me. Like, maybe I'm an asshole. Well, I realized at my work, I'm like, that's a fucking Monday. We're working, bitches. This is 4 minutes long. I'll buy you lunch and some glasses.
Capitalism doesn't stop for the eclipse.
But I'm also like, we're like, most of us are like grown ups. Yes. Like,
but also you can take a vacation day.
Well, they could take the day off if they want to. That's fine. I'm just not going to close things down for it. Because the rest of the country that we're interacting with in our emails all day are probably not closed for
eclipse. Yeah, well, until the lizard people come down during the eclipse and devour the earth. And that's then true. They won't be working.
Or it's some Y2K shit and we all fall apart.
Well, like, what? Like, how much of an asshole are you going to feel like if you're working and like the world explodes?
Oh,
man. At least I'll be with a rhinoceros.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's coming up.
I told them to bring their families.
Yeah,
that's nice, then, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just really concerned
about their loved ones.
I'm just concerned about traffic at work. Because the places we're going are not meant for this many people, and that's what everyone's concerned about.
That is. That's really what it is. It's not really. They're worried that cell towers are going to get overwhelmed. They're worried about roads getting overwhelmed and just people getting like cars breaking down because of being stuck in traffic. That kind of shit. That's what the fear is.
And it's a legitimate fear. You know, like, I am legitimately fearing that I'm going to be stuck in a cyber truck for the rest of my life. I'm going in a cyber truck.
I forgot you were taking a cyber truck. That's right.
I'm just like, no, I don't want to die in a douche mobile.
You, like, shoot an arrow at it? Isn't that a thing they've done? Like, shoot stuff at it?
I don't know.
Can you do that?
I mean, sure. I don't think my friend will like it if I start shooting shit at his new Cybertruck, but whatever. I'm sure he's got insurance. All right. So moving on. Just some other news. Walker season 4 is returning. It'll be the night before we drop this. So that's Wednesday, April 3rd with The Quiet. So that's coming back. Also, it's really tragic and sad news. Chance Perdomo, he played Andre Anderson in The Boys spinoff, Gen V. He was also in Adventures of Sabrina, her really hot cousin. I don't know if it was a character, but Sabrina's really hot cousin. He was a bi guy who lived in the house. And then, anyways, unfortunately, he died in a motorcycle accident this week.
That's
Awesome. Yeah, and the cast for season two is just about to start filming on Gen V, and so they have pushed that off indefinitely. I'm not sure what they're going to do with that show, but it just was tragic. He was a really good actor, and you know, I want to objectify someone like me. It's just gonna be attractive, but you know, he was just. I very much enjoyed watching him, you know, and this was a bummer. I don't know what's going to do for the show, but bummer all around. And such, you know, as is Nazi magicians. Nazi magicians are just a bummer. And last night I hung out the phone with Diana. And I was like, did you watch the episode yet? And she said, yes. Why? And I was like, because I was about to tell you, I'm going to go watch. I had to go dive back into Nazi magicians. Which she said I wouldn't be surprised if I hadn't seen the episode.
If I hadn't watched the show, I would have not been shocked by that.
Yeah. So this was season 8's episode 13. It first aired February 6, 2013, and was directed by Phil Scriccia and written by Ben Edlund. So heavy hitters here for this one, which is a big episode in terms of lore, but just a lot happens in this episode.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to dive right in. Our recap is just men of letters, men of letters, men of letters.
Very men of letters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I cannot pronounce the name of this city in Belarus.
Vitsyubex. And right. So this is really something I think is really important to know. This is a real town. And during World War II, when this is happening, Nazis were occupying this town. Right. And this is one of the reasons that I'm going to start off telling you this. I want you guys to remember this when we get to the part about the Thule. So this town used to have a pretty big, large Jewish population. There used to be basically half the town, but Nazis came in and half the people either, you know, fled, or half of them thankfully fled, but the other half are basically Nazis ended up operating a prison there, and there's forced labor camps, and everybody was murdered. So when we start this Belarus 1944, and the guy goes, I'm late because it was a shoemaker's daughter, that's not really funny. Because this town, so I'm going to let you come to your own conclusion about that as Belarus was under Nazi occupations. So, but then. Well,
especially when the other guy's comment response to him immediately was something about getting the clap, like trying to get the clap. So, yeah, it was gross.
But then we get some satisfying moments of violence.
We do. One of them's trying to light a cigarette, and then some large figure approaches him and throws him through the fucking guard shack.
So,
and so there's like this fight with some large person creature outside of the guard shack, but inside the building that they're guarding, we've got some like Nazi officer pouring, like has a jar of blood. And then we got another one making notes from in a ledger from, some radio calls.
Yep. Yeah, and so you're like, lots of books, lots of Nazis, a radio operator just yelling, it won't go down, it won't go down, story of my next sex tape. And so
and whatever is coming after them, they are all queued up to shoot the shit out of, while this officer, Nazi officer, is doing a fucking blood ritual.
Yeah, he's doing some magic, and the thing is, like, they're like, one, you can really tell, like, he's Nazi, because he starts damning the sorcerers of Abraham, and if that's not some anti-Semitic bullshit, I don't know what is. So, he lights something on fire, and that ignites a cloaking flame, and then the giant man comes in, and he just rips apart Nazis. Yeah,
it's a giant man. It's just a big, big man. A little Andre the Giant.
That's what I was kind of thinking. I was trying to think of the best way to compare him to, and I think very Andre the Giant. Like, I just immediately want to hug him.
Yeah, because it's not like or the Rock human size.
Like, I also, there was times where I thought he was rockish. Like Dwayne Johnson.
Maybe. Maybe. I went Andre because I think also just the angular face, which is associated with someone that size sometimes. But either way, it was just a very, very, very large man who was not bothered by a bunch of bullets at all.
Nope.
And And so there we go. That's our intro scene.
Yep. And, you know, he just goes inside and the commander yells at him to tell your masters, it's not over. And then everything goes up in flames in a very cool effect. So we have this very epic opening to this, right? We're just like, Nazis getting ripped apart. I can see that over and over again. And then just flames, flames.
But in Lebanon, Kansas, in modern times, Sam and Dean have pulled up at this abandoned, what appears to be an abandoned factory with a door in the hill below it. And they figured out that no one's been here in 65 to 70 years. This is the location that the men of letters gave them to go to.
Yes, it is the coordinates that match the key for the supernatural mother load. So we're about to see what is waiting for them in the supernatural mother load.
And as they discover when they go inside, it's the fucking Batcave.
And it's very deco. Like, I know this like was supposed to be 40s, but it's so gorgeous. Everything is just gorgeous. And there's a ham radio and a telegraph and a switchboard.
And so many books. So many books. And apparently there's a shower and some left behind robes and slippers too, because Dean goes and immediately takes a shower.
Yeah. And so there's also a generator that works. And Dean is just really impressed with the water pressure because it's important. And yes. Sam just wants to acknowledge that this place is weird. And we're just, you know, Dean's just like, we're not going to talk about the fact that we don't know how this power started. We're just going to pretend like this is all just awesome stuff.
Yeah. And he's like, look, but he also doesn't want Sam to get all like hoity toity, like the men of letters, like they knew something that the hunters don't. But Sam's like, no, I think that they do. They might. This could help us. And this could help all of society catch a break in all this shit that we're dealing with all the time. So I'm going to research the fuck out of everything and see what they knew.
But Dean's not wrong, because Sam points out, you know, when he's like, you know, they're a secret society. And Dean volleys back with, that means they made stuff up. And that's accurate. Like, the more time I spend researching secrets, you know, I have yet to find a secret society that just didn't make shit up. And Dean also says that they were fezzes and sashes and swung scimitars around like it was a bad thing. Like, how is that a bad thing? That's what I want to do. If I could have a fez and a sash on right now and be swinging a sword, damn well know I'd be doing it. Also, Dean's dead guy robe has initials TEP embroidered in red on the left breast pocket. And according to Ben Edlund, this is a shout out to Tyrone Edmund Power, who was an American actor from the 1930s to 50s. Edlund said, a better swordsman than most, a wartime pilot, had a heart attack while shooting a duel in Spain. Definitely man of letters.
Over in Wilkes Barre, Pennsylvania, we have an older Jewish gentleman enter the library, and the librarian obviously knows him and says that he's late. And the man's talking about how he had to change bus lines because he was being followed. It just sounds super weird. And you can tell the librarian does not really believe him. And, but he gets the manuscript that the Jewish man has asked for. It's, from an estate. And
so it's from an estate, but it's more importantly, it's from an uncatalogued collection. And so this is like a researcher's dream. It's just a box full of crap that you don't know what's in there. Like, you think it could be something, and now you're going through and finding it. And so he finds a ledger, and then he says a word that I'm not going to repeat because I would just mess it up. And it's Yiddish for dear God.
And it is the ledger, this burned up book from Belarus, where we saw the beginning scene. It's this ledger that was being written in at the time. And so he's trying to explain to the librarian that this is like super special and has to be protected. And the librarian's like, yeah, sure, of course it will be, because it's safe here in the fucking library, dum-dum. It's basically the librarian's attitude.
Yeah, he's a dick. So, but also
But anyway, so the old man gets a little sassy with him, which is good. I appreciate it when he basically tells him that, you know, he needs to do something about the bug up his ass. But, you know, either way, so the old man leaves the library and goes straight to the campus pub and uses the payphone.
With a credit card. And somebody's card.
Watching him.
He has a payphone that you can insert a credit card in. And I just was like, quit.
I remember that era. That's briefly.
Crazy. I can't even imagine, like, oh my God, how much I could steal off of that. Anyway, so somebody's watching him leave his message at the tone.
And he's leaving a message about how there's no time left. He found it and gives like a code number to find this and hangs up. You know shit's going weird because he leaves his notes unattended at this point. He turns away from the payphone and walks towards the window and is yelling out. Yelling toward the window from indoors so nobody else can hear him, but towards the person following him about, like, why are you so shy? Come on in. And people in the pub are looking at him. And then he's just yelling about a Nazi piece of rubbish. And then he starts smoking. They don't mean he lit up a cigarette in the bar. Like, smoke from under his collar. Mm-hmm. Like, his body is physically smoking. And then he catches fire.
And he's
screaming about Nazi pigs. Yeah.
And pretty much, you know, like, if I can go out yelling, you Nazi pig, like, I think my life will probably be in a good position. So, 2 weeks later at the bunker. So, I just like how they kind of skip through this, right? So, we have this nice, like, this is what happened in those 2 weeks. Dean went out to go see Kevin. He's fine. Garth is fine. And Sam is just working.
Garth says hi. Yeah,
Garth says hi. And Sam is just working at these tables. Are so fucking awesome. And they are like, this room really much does remind me of the reading room at Library of Congress, but just like the massive tables that you can spread out and work on. And I'm so jealous of all of this space.
Yeah.
And well, so this Sam is like, has, well, so I'm like, so this is what I need for like my new house. Like, do I just need to build a bunker?
Yeah. Or just a big research table.
This is a big research room. Anyway, so Sam,
your own library. So, but Sam has discovered something about the Judah Initiative.
Well, because he has been creating a Men of Letters database, and this is like, this is the Sam I love. This is hot Sam. Sam is getting all geeky, and he's making databases like where he's cross-referencing the names of the people, the names of the things they did, like going through all of her stuff. It's so fucking hot. So now Sam is found.
The Judah Initiative in World War II, which was made up of rabbis, and they were hardcore saboteurs. Which is fun. He figured out that one of them is still alive. And or was. So Rabbi Bass, he was still alive until 2 weeks ago. Rabbi Bass, he was on a college campus and spontaneously combusted. So now we know that our gentleman from the previous scene was part of the Men of Letters.
No, he was not part of the Men of Letters. He was part of the Judah Initiative. Well, he was part of the
Judah Initiative, which worked with the Men of
Letters. Yeah, they were just like in society, like in, you know, they were like a dotted line to each other. They weren't like a part of each other.
Right. They worked together, but they weren't the same.
Yeah.
Kind of. So, anyway, so.
It would be Dean like is, the CIA and MI6, but right. In secret societies.
Well, Dean's drinking about it because he's annoyed about them having a case when he just got back from visiting Kevin.
But he's nesting, right? So he just like has a place that he just got back to and he's sad about leaving it. That is adorable.
So Dean's nesting and Sam's making databases and Liz is swooning.
I love Men of Letters. I love the bunker. This is my happy place.
Me too. All right. So they go to Pennsylvania. Sam goes to the library. Duh. Says he's a research assistant of Rabbi Bass. And
he is so nerded up. I'm just fanning myself again. He's got like a little like, he's got a little sweater vest on. With a little jacket. Like, yeah, he's very nerdy and I love it.
Well, he wants to see whatever the rabbi saw the day that he died. So in the meantime, Dean's going to go to the pub and talk to a couple of the girls there that were there at the pub that night. And they're like, yeah, he was a nice old kook. And basically said that he talked a lot to himself or to anyone that would listen about a secret war with special Nazis, necromancers.
Nazi necromancers.
So, and while this is all going down, some guy with a umbrella in his drink is making eyes at Dean. So, there we go.
Yeah.
Back at the...
Yeah, back at the library, Sam opens up the tote that this manuscript was in, and also that manuscript would not have been that tote. But anyways, and instead of the manuscript, there is the Explorer's Guide to North American Birds, which looks really pretty, but it's odd.
Not
a ledger.
So Dean has to go confront this guy that's making eyes at him and flashes FBI badge. He's Agent Bolin.
Yeah. So Agent Bolin, obviously that's Mark Bolin, who was T-Rex. And last week I learned that Mark Bolin once got up to 300 pounds before he died.
Huh?
Yeah. I didn't know that. T-Rex was fat. Who knew?
Weird. Well, this guy's like, oh, I thought you were a headhunter. I was waiting for you out of your meeting. And then Dean's like, no, I've seen you a bunch today. And then the guy's like, no, I'm sorry, I lied. I thought we had a magic eye moment or eye magic moment. And Dean gets very flustered when he thinks he's being hit on. Like, very, very flustered. And so Dean has to, like, stumble away. Luckily, Sam calls to distract
him. Yeah, but as he's stumbling away, he starts calling him. I'm just doing a federal thing, citizen. And like calling people citizen. I'm going to call you citizen from now on.
So Sam's like, hey, this research doesn't make sense, but FYI, I'm going to use a code word to tell you that somebody's following me.
It's something stuck to my shoe. And that's an old gumshoe thing. Gumshoe. Dun, 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 dun. But it's an old thing that you would say when somebody was following you. I've got gum stuck to my shoe. Also, you didn't know that? Say Diana Lord. And Dean is also, I feel like, overplaying his masculinity by commenting how hot the co-eds were when he's talking to Sam. And but to be fair, in the transcript, they are named attractive young woman 1 and 2. So I mean, I guess they had to be attractive. But I also feel like there was just like, super, super hot women. My penis is large. So they agreed to meet up at the visitor's parking lot.
To set a trap for whoever's following Sam. So baby's parked and Sam walks up fumbling keys by himself, and you can tell someone's watching from the bushes, and Dean sneaks up on the spy, and it is our giant from Belarus.
He is. He's very, very big. And he gets thrown across the parking lot. And then the man
breaks baby's window.
Is that through a baby? I thought it was through another car. I don't know. So he gets thrown across the parking lot. The man comes for Sam. And then when Sam cuts him, it's weird. It's like.
Well, Sam gets into Trunk. So we do get a brief moment of Trunk's contribution here.
Thanks, Trunk.
Yes. And then. And then he cuts into his arm with the knife he pulled out, and it's like clay.
Yeah, but you know, it's also like I can see this. Like, do you ever have those dreams where like you punch somebody and nothing happens? Like, can you imagine this with a knife? You're like, what the?
That'd be very distressing.
What the hell? Like, why won't this work? And then someone says, "Stop!"
As he's choking Sam out, and who is it but our guy from the bar? That was making eyes at Dean.
Bearded guy. So I call him at this point. I call him Bearded Guy because I couldn't remember his name. And then he tells him that he's a golem and he's my golem.
Aww.
Did you know what a golem was? Do I have to explain that? You know, okay. I figured that's a well. I didn't like, I figured everyone knew that one. So I hope. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking.
So they go to this rental property.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking at. Like,
it looks like a house, like, but it's got rental.
I feel like it's like an
renting apartment,
like the college houses, you know, like near campus, mm-hmm. like made for students. They're just gonna fuck it up. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a rental house ish. Whatever.
Maybe that, like Rabbi Jacob, Rabbi Isaac had rented it.
Well, I don't know. This is where Aaron is staying with his golem. And he shares that Rabbi Bass was his grandfather. And he started following Sam and Dean when they started investigating the rabbi's death.
And no, they didn't have a moment.
They did not have a moment. He was definitely trailing Dean. Yeah. But that's basically it. He's really like mocking of this golem. Like he's just kind of like, he kind of like likes him, but just kind of talks shit. And he's like, he's shaped from clay and brought to life by the rabbi to protect the Jewish people. And it was left to Aaron by his grandfather. So
Right.
And Sam mentions the Judah Initiative, though, and Golem starts talking, which shocks everybody because apparently they're not normally talking.
No, they talk. Like, just in this, he hasn't talked.
Well, they imply that they don't always.
Yeah. So the Golem isn't happy that they know about the men of Judah, but he backs off and they drop Men of Letters, right? And then we see, like, super blonde dude with the glasses stalking them outside.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one that stalked Rabbi. So that's not good. And he's like, look, Dane's like, look, Aaron, I know this is all new to you, but our whole family is into supernatural stuff. So surprise, surprise. Well, catch up.
Yeah. And they kind of bond over this, right? They bond over their families coming from this thing. And Aaron tells him that his family thought his grandpa was nuts until he died. And a big box showed up. And when it opened it up, it was the Golem and he was naked. So how big was that box? Who delivered it? Were there stairs? Was this a crate? Like,
did you have to have a crowbar?
Like, yeah. Was it long? Was he folded up inside? Like, how did you get him in there? How did you lift this? Like, he's got to weigh like 9,000 pounds. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And dead weight of him? Like, no.
Oh, God. So, and apparently this, quote, big naked potato faced lunatic woke up and went crazy.
Because he was in a box and he was stuffed.
And he trashed his Aaron's entertainment center. Oh, but the Golem is not entertained by anything Aaron has to say. He's just talking about how, like, undevout he is and all this kind of stuff. And I really like Aaron's immediate comment was, everybody loves bacon.
Yeah, he wasn't keeping kosher. And the Golem keeps saying something in Hebrew that means take charge.
Yes. It keeps saying take charge. And Aaron just doesn't know what the fuck it means, doesn't really listen to his grandfather because nobody believed him. And he's just not prepared. And he was just so insulated from everything, all the stories his grandfather told. And now apparently his grandfather was always talking about trying to track down the Thule Society, Thule, which were the Nazi necromancers. And so Sam and Dean have to explain what a necromancer is. And, the Golem's like, yeah, that's who murdered the grandfather, and we need to find him. So he's
he also says that this is important for later. That Aaron says that all he knows about the Thule were that they were this twisted secret fraternity hell bent to world domination that sponsored the early days of the Nazi Party. So that's an important fact to keep in mind what Aaron thinks the Thule Society were. Just bookmark that.
So. There, Sam's like, hey, wait, that number you have written down from your grandfather, though, by the way, is a library call number.
Library of Congress call number. There's a difference because otherwise it could have been a Dewey call number. And Sam knows the difference because he's a hot nerd. So the colleges, universities typically use Library of Congress as a reference system as opposed to undergrad, like a high school or elementary school would use like a Dewey Decimal system. But Sam is a hot nerd. And of course he knows the Library of Congress call symbol and even knows this is sciences and probably birds. He knows the classification system's that hot because he's hot nerd Sam. Hot nerd Sam.
Even with that hair?
His hair he's grown into his hair. Like and you can see I'm no longer commenting on it. It's fine now. He's grown into it. It just took a while. It was awkward.
I just had to check.
Okay.
I'm okay
with this. I'm okay with nerd hair. Nerd hair is fine.
Got it. So they go break into the library. Aaron comments on the fact that they broke into the fucking library.
Why is there no alarm? That's the fucking dumb library. Like, I'm sorry. There should at least be an alarm. Anyways.
Well, Sam is going to run up the stairs and go find the book while Dean, Aaron, and the Golem wait for him. Sam finds it quite quickly because he knows what he's doing.
He knows his call.
And then swiftly gets hit with a dart in the neck. So this is not good. Not good. But it's not just like, oh, sleepy time dart. It's a, oh, you're going to die dart because it's like turning him like bruisey, like,
something's skin, bad is happening.
Dying bad, yeah. And so he, like, manages to shove a cart into our blonde Nazi dude, blonde Thule guy, and who demands the ledger, and runs down the stairs. And as he's collapsing in front of his friends, he goes, help, necromancer. And then Aaron's like, oh, shit. And then Aaron gets darted, too. So Dean luckily tells Golem, hey, they're both gonna die unless you go catch whoever did that. So the golem's like fucking like after him, which is cool to have a golem to go do.
That is, it is.
But he gets, and he gets darted, but it doesn't matter. And so he gets the blunt. And it's just really, I found this hilarious. He reached through the shelves and grabs him and is just like smashing his head through the shelves.
That was entertaining. Yeah.
Which was satisfying. And then drags him down the stairs to Dean.
Yeah. Okay. Says, yeah. Long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he drags him down the stairs where he does use his last dying word, the fool. And he snaps his neck, right? And like, but why? Like, why did you take him down the stairs? Like, why did you just kill him up there? Why'd you wait?
I don't understand either. Dean just said they're both going to die unless we catch whoever cast the spell. So here's my question. Dean never clarified that we have to kill the person. What if they needed information from him? And the golem didn't know this. I don't know.
I don't know.
And did we know that Blondie fucking cast the spell, or did he just fucking shoot the dart? I don't know. This is a very like loose piece bit of the story. Yeah,
you lucked out here, Dean. You lucked out.
Right. For sure.
So we know like Nazi necromancer is dead. We later learn his name was Torvald, but he dead.
One down.
Yeah. And so they wake up, like Aaron wakes up in the back of Baby and he dismisses Sam and Dean digging. And I know he's really sad because, like, at this point, like, the grave is already done and they're just there with the body. Like, he missed the best part.
Yeah. And the golem tells him, he's like, hey, those men of letters saved your life. So, but they're burying this necromancer before they, you know, put gas on it and set it on fire. They're discussing how to, oh no, Mr. Bill over there is the comment that Dean makes. And basically they're saying like, if shit goes awry, how do we dispatch this golem?
It's a good question, right?
Yeah. And Aaron is watching. Aaron doesn't hear their conversation, but he definitely sees them pour gasoline on and burn this body and calls them psychopaths.
Yep. He's slightly freaked by them burning the corpse.
So back at this run to Aaron's house, whatever, Sam is using internet translators on the ledger in this logbook from the Belarus compound. And
it's disturbing.
Aaron's like,
says is May 12th, 1944. The commandant has been informed that the group one has responded favorably to the latest trials. Yeah. That's never a good thing to see in a ledger. Mm-mm.
So Aaron's like, this is ledger is one that my grandfather was convinced was lost in a fire. And Sam's like, yeah, it's describing horrible magical experiments that were performed. And the golem knows about him too. He's like, yeah, it's more horrible than words. Okay, then. So Sam realizes that the golem was the one that was there.
Yeah, he was created in the ghettos of Vitsubex, however you guys are, in Belarus. He was in the ghettos of there to burn the place down. So that is where he was created. He was created by the rabbis there. And so Sam finally is like, what the fuck does this take charge mean?
Yeah, and he's like, oh, well, Aaron needs to consult the pages. And
why can't Aaron consult the pages, dang it?
Because the pages were like a really nice thin vellum, and he definitely rolled weed and didn't smoke them.
I'm not saying that I have never seen, heard, or maybe on some like television show saw people in a hotel room that use a vellum of like, you know, the Bibles that were like in the hotel room drawers to roll things. I mean, but that, because that vellum is... I mean, I can see it. Yeah, the vellum's nice. But, you know.
Here's my one comment I would say. And this is not as a disparaging comment against the Bible. But I feel like you know there's another fucking Bible. But there might not be another guide to golems that was a gift from your grandfather.
That's probably why the Bibles are fine to smoke. No, saying whatever. But, allegedly. Come on, man. Like, you can clearly tell this is really old. Like, it's written in Hebrew. Like, this looks like some old shit. Come on. Like,
even if your grandpa, even if you think your grandpa crazy, it was special to him.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to burn my grandfather's prayer book. Like, that's just not...
Right.
It's just not something you do.
There's a line.
And also, it just looks like a rare book, you fucktard. Like, how stupid were you?
So, finally, Aaron's pissed, though, when everybody's judging him for this, and really just wants the golem to tell him what to do. And the golem doesn't like that. He's like, it's not my job to teach the teacher, and it's not my place. And he walks away. So, there we go. We find out Sam's like, yeah, by the way, the Thule were murdering Jews and gypsies and then trying to magically reanimate them to as practice so they could later magically reanimate their own people.
Yeah, it's fucked up. So fucked up. And in the last page is a roster of all the reanimated Thule, and they learn that they can be killed with a headshot, but the body has to be burned within 12 hours or it will reanimate again. Those Nazi bastards.
Gross. Yeah. Black town car. Yeah. And this guy has this fancy ring with a symbol on it.
Yeah, it's a sword and four crosses.
Our commandant is what they were calling him. The Nazi officer from Belarus is there now. And he is annoyed that their blonde guy is dead, but can tell through magic-y shit that he's like tasting in the air that it was not by a man, because I guess he talked to the blonde guy's ghost. I don't know. That's basically what he says. He talks to the blonde guy's
ghost. He's a necromancer.
The ghost was forced to depart. He was forced to depart. But he finds the residue of dirt in the library shelves and knows that it's clay. So now he knows that it's a golem. So Dean decides to make a call to Garth. And while him and Sam are researching golems, because now they're trying to figure out how the fuck they dispatch this golem if they need to. And basically, Garth doesn't know anything about it, and no one in Garth's circle has ever even heard of the Thule. Which is not great.
Yeah, that's not smart. Okay. So, they don't know what they're doing. And then Aaron comes in and basically questions their right to end and control his golem, which is fair. Like, who the fuck do you think you are, Mr. Winchester? Like, this isn't your shit. This is my responsibility.
And as they're arguing about that, the front door breaks in.
And it's the Nazis. And
it's fucking Nazis. We've got three very strong armed Nazis and our good old commandant dude is there too. And Sam, Dean, and Aaron are all pinned down with guns. The golem enters and is ready to smash, but our commandant guy tells him enough and he stops.
No.
And why does he stop? It's very sad.
It's very sad. And like when he like becomes like unanimated, I guess that's the word, like he just becomes so sad to me. Like this is just, yeah, like I just want to hug him. Like, and like, come back, poor golem.
Yeah. So they, and it was alluded to a little earlier. I'm sorry. We kind of jumped past a couple of ways that you take control of a golem. Are either writing or wiping off a word from their head, or through a scroll in their mouth.
Yeah. And those are all traditional. And so we see this happen. So when he says a second time,
spits out a scroll.
Yeah, and it is a pretty cool scroll. Anyway, it's pretty cool.
So Golem spits up a scroll, but he spits it into the hand of our fucking Nazi commandant, and.
Anyway, we learned that Aaron was supposed to write his name on the scroll, and he did not know that. And then he gets bitch slapped by the commander.
Yeah, I don't like it. So in the meantime, Dean keeps eyeing opportunities to either grab a pistol or whatever, and just doesn't really get an ability an opening to do so. Sam is telling the Nazi to screw himself when they want to find the ledger.
I appreciate the lines of, how about you screw yourself, you Nazi bastards? Then Dean calls him a Nazi necromancer dicks. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Nazi necromancer dicks. Mm-hmm. And anyways, so Sam actually tries to kind of distract them by like asking questions and also just shit talking. And while he's doing that, unfortunately, one of the henchmen find the fucking ledger.
When Sam is doing this, he does figure out that the commander, unlike the other Thule, he's not undead. He's immortal. And that's a difference he has between the other ones.
Yeah. And Dean's like talking shit about the blonde Nazi they killed. He's just doing, they're just shit talking. It's kind of sweet. Anyways, the commandant's just very happy for finding this fucking ledger. And, he's just like, I'm just going to tell a joke. Jew, two Gentiles and a golem walk into the bar, and it doesn't end with them coming out. But as this is happening, Aaron grows some balls and picks up a big old piece of wood and whacks the fuck out of the commandant in the head like a fucking baseball. It's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. And Sam has finally impressive. Learned to make headshots. Finally in season 8. Yes. He's gotten good with his gun finally.
Yeah, because this allows just enough opening for Sam and Dean to each get guns, and they both shoot this commandant guy in the head at the same time. And then another, one of the Nazi thugs tries to take Aaron as a hostage, but it doesn't really work.
Okay, yeah. So everyone but the commander is dead, right? And the commander yells, "You can kill me, but you can never kill all the Thule." And yeah. Yes, you can. And we're going to talk about that because it's time for lore. All right, so yes, you could kill all the Thule, or you could just let them fade into nothingness. Why? Because they were fucking boring, and maybe that is how it should be. Nazis shouldn't get to have cool stuff because they are fucking Nazis. So in researching this, I was like, yeah, Nazi magicians, but of course I was disappointed because things aren't real as much as you want them to be. And one thing to understand about the time period prior to World War II, starting way before that, but definitely like late 1800s up into World War II, having secret lodges in societies were all the rage because life was really boring and people like to dress up in robes and chant things, right? And there are, if you go through the books about this stuff, it's all about this order and this order, and there was this Rudolph, and there was this Carl, and this blah blah blah, and they were in this thing, and they were pretty much like they're all fucking racist. In the fact that a lot of the lodges are coming down from Madame Blavatsky's theory of theosophy. If you don't know, Madame Blavatsky was a grifter who basically is responsible for most of the magical nonsense that exists today. But one of her things was about like there are these races that humans were descended from, right? And depending on which outlook you're looking at is like 4 to 8 races. But this is where that theory of Aryan race tends to come from. And a lot of them say like, even like they go, because Blavatsky and Theosophists are really into, or I'm using their word, which is Orientalism, being that, you know, Eastern mysticism and stuff just seems like, you know, the cool things. But in order to have this theory that the Aryan race was superior, how can you have this Eastern thing? So to make that logic work, they would say then that the Eastern people were descended from the Aryans, right? So, but basically this all, the main like racial theory is that there is like specific races. This is why the Aryan race was superior, right? That's where the secret magic comes from. And of all the lodges that kind of went through things, the main one that precedes the Thule Society was called, oh boy, here we go. We're going into the German. Germanenorden. Sounds good, right? Germanenorden? I didn't sound like, I'm Swedish chef, but so that, yeah, that was a quote unquote secret anti-Semitic ethnic national based sect who based their rituals on Freemasonry because nobody can think up their own thing. So it was kind of a cross between the Masonic rites and other Hermetic things, right? So everyone's just kind of pulling from what they want. Also, at the same time, there is this thing going on in Germany. It's happening in a lot of other countries, but in Germany, it's called Völkisch. And it's this idea of basically, how do I put this? The folklore of Germany. And it's creating this mythology of the German land and German people in order to create a national identity that can bind people together. Right. So going back and being like Hans Christian Andersen folktales and all these things, but they kind of went, some things were going back more towards Odin worlds, like kind of towards the Norse thing. So you read a lot of things about Thule society stealing things from the Vikings as well. So, but there's this kind of important things that were happening at the time that influenced what these cults were made out of, right? And so the Grimman and Orden, they had an application, and in their form, they requested details about the color of the applicant's hair, eyes, and skin. The ideal coloration was blonde to dark hair, blue to light brown eyes, and pale skin. They also had further details regarding the particular matters of their parents and grandparents, and if you're married, of your spouse as well. And so to talk about a little bit what their initiation was like, so there was a summons to initiation ceremony of the Berlin province in 1914, and this was a frock coat and white tie affair, and any new candidate would have to submit to racial tests by the Berlin phrenologist Robert Berger Villingen, who had devised the plaster meter, which was his instrument for determining how pure your Aryan race was by your cranial measurement. You can't tell that's a bunch of bullshit. You
said phrenologist, and I was like, no.
Oh, yeah. That's where phrenology went to, right? Phrenology was generally used either to determine if you're a criminal or, like, what class system you belong to. It's all fucking nonsense, because I can hit you on the head and create as many bumps as I want. All right. So going back a couple more years, again, you're getting the idea this was kind of around, like, the 1910s-ish era, you know? They found like something that said what their novice initiation ritual was. And so I just want to tell you this so you could understand how stupid these people are. So while the novices awaited in an adjoining room, the brothers assembled in the ceremonial room of the lodge. The master took his place at the front of the room beneath the baldachin, flanked on either side by two knights wearing white robes and helmets adorned with horns and leading on their swords. So we got two dudes in white robes, but on top of the white robes is a helmet and there's horns, and they got that right. In front of these sat the treasurer and secretary wearing white Masonic sashes. So we got Dean sashes, while the herald took up his position in the center of the room. At the back of the room, in the Grove of the Grail, stood the bard in a white gown. Before him, the master of ceremonies in a blue gown, while the other lodge brothers stood in a semicircle around him as far as the tables of the treasurer and secretary. Behind the move of the Grail was a music room where a harmonium and piano were accompanied by a small choir of forest elves. The ceremony began with soft harmonium music while the brothers sang the Pilgrim's Chorus from Wagner's Tannhäuser. The ritual commenced in candlelight, while with brothers making the swine, the sign of the swastika, and the master reciprocating. Then the blindfolded novices, clad in pilgrimage mantles, were ushered by the master of ceremonies into the room. Here the master told them of the order's Aryo-Germanic and aristocratic philosophy before the bard lit the sacred flame in the grove and the novices were divested of their mantles and blindfolds. At this point, the master seized Wotan's spear, that's some Odinism crap, and held it before him while the two knights crossed their swords upon it. A series of calls and responses accompanied by probably like, I'm a Nazi, are you a Nazi? Well, they didn't have a Nazi yet, but you know, I'm a racist, whatever. So their consecration followed with cries from the forest elves as the new brothers were led into the Grove of the Grail around the bard's sacred flame. I'm sorry, you've got fucking forest elves. I cannot take you seriously. It like feels like the elves in Disenchantment, if you've ever seen that. So, all right, so that's in 1916, the Order newsletter began to display a curved arm swastika superimposed on a cross. And soon advertisements for this kind of Volkish jewelry, rings, pendants, and tie pins, incorporating various runes and the swastika started appearing in their Order newsletter. So this is one of the things like starting to be the rise of the swastika in Germany is starting to happen around this time. And so a lot of it's contributed back to this era. All right. At the same time, a man named Rudolf von Seppotendorf, and that's not his real name. He wasn't a baron. He gets adopted a thing, but that's just what he ends up going by. So he becomes a member of the Grimman Orden and meets the Berlin chief Hermann Pohl. And Hermann Pohl, like, is like, oh, hey, like, I saw in these letters, you know, in your advertisements, like, you had all these runes. And Pohl tells him, like, we don't know what these means because of all the racial contamination, the Aryans have lost this knowledge. So once we clean this up, like, we'll be able to understand them. So it's another one of these justifications for purifying of a race, being that we can understand magic if we get rid of these parts of, or, yeah, it's stupid. All right. So in 1918, the Germanen Orden has adopted the name of the Thule Society to cover, as basically a cover for the Munich Lodge of the Germanen Orden. So the Thule Society ends up taking rooms at the Four Seasons. And so it's a very posh hotel. So they have five rooms. It's a very posh hotel. And they had lodges there that were invoked at least once a week. And they had lectures and excursions. They still love the harmonium. There was a female choir. The rooms are decorated with the Thule emblem showing a long dagger superimposed on a shining swastika sun wheel. And male members of the Thule Society were called brothers, and they sported a bronze pin of a swastika and a shield cross by two spears. So, okay, swastika on a shield, cross by two spears. And then the sisters just had a plain swastika of gold. All right, 1919, Seb Ottendorf outlined the roles organizations. Like, he's basically said, we want to have two campaigns for this organization. So one of them, this is our inner campaign, and that's for Germany's spiritual growth. And the outer one, which is real, we really care for, which was overthrowing the people state of Bavaria. So Soviet Union post-World War I has come into Bavaria. Eisner and Bavarians have taken over this part of that. So they want to throw them out. So basically they're having all of this occult stuff be sort of the cover for all their political stuff they're trying to do, right? So like, we're just a magical secret society, but also we're overthrowing governments. So the inner campaigns topics, so the ones that were for like the spiritual growth, those would be things like Nordic culture, the esoteric implications of heraldry and the racial significance of genealogy, proposals to replace Germany's laws with the imagined laws of ancient Northern Europe. Like, they just imagine these laws that, like, were, like, the better laws that existed before, and they're like, we're just going to make these up, and these are going to be our new laws, right? One of the Law Ring's members was a young student named Hans Frank, who later would become a governor general in Nazi-occupied Poland, where he did horrible things and was later hanged at Nuremberg. So they keep going, and so they're trying to overthrow the Bavarian Revolution. And in April 1919, they were accused of attempting a coup, and seven of their members were taken into custody and executed. One of them was their founder, one of the founders, Walter Nauhaus, but also a bunch of aristocrats were part of this group. There was a countess, there was a prince. The order ends up blaming Seb Ottendorf for losing their membership, and he didn't attend any more meetings until 1919. And so during this time, there are various members of the Deutsche Arbeiterpartei, which is DAP, which would later become the Nazi Party. Hitler was a part of the DAP, and there was members of the DAP, DAP, or whatever, that were part of the Thule. Hitler was never part of the Thule. That gets, like, brought up, like, people say that, but that's not really true. And there were members of the Nazi parties that were part of the Thule, but not all members of the Thule were members of the Nazi party. That makes sense. So, So basically the society falls in decline and is dissolved, right? About 1924, but 1933, Sebottendorf wants to revive them. And at this point, the Nazi party has taken over. The National Socialist Party has taken over in Germany. And he tries to revive the Thule Society in Munich. He publishes a book called Bevor Hitler Kam, Before Hitler Came, and he dedicates it to the seven Thule members who were killed. And he basically says in this that the Thule Society was the most important precursor to National Socialism. And he's like, we're the reason that they're Nazis. And Hitler and his friends were like, no, you're not. But, so, even though, like, people were, like, the Nazi socialists at the time are like, this did not influence us. And there were other occult things that go into this. This was exaggerated by Sebottendorf in order to try and basically get the Thule Society back, right? And try to get his, like, status placed back in. But even though it was made up, a lot of early writers, when they were trying to bridge this idea between the Nazis and the occult, used that as reasoning for why Hitler was an occult magician and why there were Nazi magicians. But it wasn't true. A lot of it was made up. However, it's not to say like there wasn't like any sort of esoteric influence on the Nazi socialism. Obviously, the swastika comes from that. But they end up like banning all Masonic lodges. They try and, you know, distance themselves from that. But I think there's a lot of the idea, like, it's Nazis are the things you're allowed to hate, and that's really great, right? But Nazi magicians, like, just became cool in comic books for some reason. Like, I think it also Raiders of the Lost Ark probably has a lot to do with it. There's a lot of pop culture reasons for this. Yeah. And I think there's, and I've seen this theory before too, that if we can impose sort of like the devil made me do it type of things, right? If we can impose like, real, you know, occultism and magic onto the ideas of something so tragic and so awful, like, it made, like, I don't say like reason, make there be a reason for it, but somehow like that makes it be more sensical for some people, right? But at the same time, I also think it kind of makes them seem cooler, and I don't want Nazis to seem cool. I want Nazis to seem
I don't think, but most people don't think of things like that.
I know, cool. But I don't want to glorify them at all, right? I want them to be boring, fucking nasty people. What they did, like, in this actual town, that this is, like, this is why, like, I made that point earlier. Like, what they did in this town is far more horrific than if they'd actually been Nazi necromancers, right? Like, the reality of the situation of what happened in Belarus, I think it, like, the tens of thousands of people who were murdered in the ghettos of that place is way more terrifying than the idea that some Nazi tried to raise the dead, right? Like, that's what's horrifying about it. And I think, like, after, it's like, it just made me sad. Like, there's no cool research in this. It was just me being like, God, you're a bunch of horrible, stupid fucking people who were bored, wanting to make names of yourselves, wanting to push a political regime. You didn't even
want to put other people down and just picked a group and
So I don't know. Fuck you, Nazi magicians. Fuck Nazi magicians, I think is just the theme for this. So that's kind of it. And yeah, so Thule Society, not cool. I'm a poet.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the end of our episode, and we come back and our poor golem is just left there.
Yeah. So all the Nazis are dead. Our poor golem has been deactivated still. Aaron and Sam and Dean are there. And anyways, Aaron basically is sharing with them. He's like, you know, I know the Thule are still out there. So he unrolls the scroll, writes his name, and he said he knows that his grandfather left him something important that only he can do. And he puts it in the golem's mouth to reactivate it. And it says, looks like I'm the Judah Initiative now.
And I would like this spinoff, a boy and his golem.
That would be good.
Be so cute.
That would be a good one.
Aaron's attractive. I would watch it.
Yeah. So now I call Men of Letters Bunker. I call it HQ. I'm like, all right, they're back at HQ. So Sam and Dean go back to headquarters, and Sam is still cataloging stuff.
Sam is making a brand new card for the card catalog for the new thing that they got. That's what's, you don't understand the library nerd of this. All right, so there's this big card catalog that has all these things, and he has a new book, and he's brought a new book in, and he's cataloging it. Is hot librarian nerd shit. I don't know if he's doing like a mark tag, like where he's coming up with his syntax or his taxonomy for, like, Okay, go on. Let's go. I'm gonna go to a happy place now.
Dean's asking Sam if he's a man of letters now. And they've been pouring them drinks while Frankie Lane's On the Sunny Side of the Street plays.
And it ends with the two of them drinking. And yes, they are men in letters now. But you can still use a fucking coaster on that table. Please put a coaster on that table. Oh my God, you're leaving a ring spot on that, and I will never get that out. Did you see this table? Okay, I guess that's the conclusion. This Liz loves tables. Do you have any notes for us on the popular actors of this show?
I do. Casting couch. It's the casting couch.
Were they on that show that time with that guy? La 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 la.
So here we go. I'll start off with our Rabbi Isaac Bass, is played by Hal Linden, most famously known as Barney Miller.
Yeah, that's fucking Barney Miller.
Captain Barney Miller from 1974 through 1982. So well-known, a long-running actor into American television. He's also been on television shows episodes. A single episodes of shows like Car 59, Where Are You, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Golden Girls, The Nanny, Gilmore Girls, Mindy Project, and Grey's Anatomy. And I did a big spread on purpose just to show eras and styles of stuff. So, he was also, Andrew in The Love Boat, the TV movie in 1976, and Mr. Greenwald in the 2023 movie You People. Once again, big spread for his acting career. Aaron Bass was played by Adam Rose, which it looks like we will see him again. And he has been in episodes of shows like The Sopranos, Malcolm in the Middle, Bones, My Name is Earl, Weeds, iZombie, Santa Clarita Diet, and Modern Family. He also was Makeout Dave in the George Clooney movie Up in the Air, and was in a reoccurring character named Max in the Veronica Mars series. Our Golem was played by John DeSantis, who we have seen before and might see one more time in Supernatural, not as Golem, obviously. He was Moloch, Scarecrow, and now the Golem, and then we'll see him again. He's done some stunt work, but honestly, most of his stuff is acting. He was Ragnar in the 13th Warrior. He was Lurch in the 90s series, The New Addams Family. He was Juggernaut in 13 Ghosts. Episodes of shows like Smallville, Once Upon a Time, Hell on Wheels, X-Files, Supergirl, and Arrow. A reoccurring character named Guster in Van Helsing, the Bald Man, which was a major character in Series of Unfortunate Events, which I loved. and he, in the new Peter Pan and Wendy Disney film, he is Bill. Eckert was the name of our commandant or commander that was played by Bernard Forcher. And Stubenfer Mueller in Fury and a few episodes of Grimm. Torvald was our blonde Nazi that was played by Oliver Rice. He's been in episodes of shows like Once Upon a Time, Magicians, Legends of Tomorrow, oddly enough, also as a Nazi, The Flash.
He's very blonde.
He was in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina a couple of times, Nancy Drew a couple of times, and Riverdale a few times as well. He was Simon in the movie, Always Be My Maybe, and is a reoccurring character in the series Chesapeake Shores. Oh, there we go.
Very good. So what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it because I thought it was kind of interesting having like the side story tie in, because not only are we tying in the Men of Letters to other current events, arguably. I mean, I know it all ties back to World War II, but this is happening in the now. And then you've additionally got a new creature in the Golem and how they handle that. And I think that they had a little bit of a dilemma about it. And it's kind of odd that they were willing to leave it living. Not to say they shouldn't have. We like our Golem. But that they were willing to leave it living or whatever, activated or whatever, because Aaron took control of it. And then that they're kind of settling into this Men of Letters life.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing representing a new era. And now we're finally getting to see, you know, you clearly tell this is my happy place and exactly where I want to live. Like, it's just, can I just have a bunker? We haven't even gotten to the bus. Like, you know, there's me more. Like, you're just like getting your first taste of the bunker. And yeah, I mean, can I live in a place filled with a supernatural mother load? Yes, please. Anyways. All right. Yeah. And so things we learned today, golems are cool. Nazi magicians are boring. Anything else?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's it. That covers a lot of it.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll see you next time. Cheers, George.
Cheers, bitch.
Devil's Trap Podcast is a Don't Get It production. Meow.
Devil's Trap Podcast is part of the Ship It Studios Podcast Network. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Devil's Trap Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Devil's Trap Podcast, Twitter at Devil's Trap Pod, or you can email us at devilstrap@devilstrappodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe, leave reviews, and share with all your friends. We're at all your favorite podcast outlets and at devilstrappodcast.com. I'm Babe. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.